I said, John, what are you seeing in the young Marines that are out there? And he said, sir, quite honestly, they're focused on the enemy, and he doesn't think it's an issue.
The heroine of Earth Day, Rachel Carson, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
On the Rainbow Minute.
On the Rainbow Minute.
God loves me for who I am, and God does not make mistakes.
I'm terrified because I'm the parent of a transgender child, and I'm afraid that by speaking here today, my sweet son, whom I love more than life itself, will be taken from me.
This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Ugandan trans man killed in Kenyan refugee camp, how Rachel Carson moved the earth, and Texans testify against terrifying trans bans. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Paula Thomas.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 17, 2021. A young Ugandan trans man in Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp died this week from injuries he sustained in the latest attack on perceived sexual gender minorities. Criton Trinidad Jerry Atuwera was among the victims when anti-queer thugs firebombed their sleeping quarters on March 15th. Many LGBTQ people have lived for years in the camp's Block 13 because of recurring anti-queer attacks by other refugees. Most fled neighboring Uganda when legislators proposed the death penalty for consensual adult gay sex. Fellow queer refugees called Atuwera a proud trans man, an accomplished poet, and an admired leader. Hospital officials said he had underlying health conditions that may have made it difficult for him to survive his second-degree burns. The camp is co-managed by the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, the Kenyan government, and its Department of Refugee Affairs. According to a press release from the UN agency, Jordan Iyeshiji also sustained second-degree burns in the attack. He is recovering and is expected to be discharged soon. A High Commission official told Reuters this week that additional security will be sent to protect the camp's queer refugees. Even though Kenya punishes gay sex with up to 14 years in prison, the UN press release noted that the East African nation remains the only country in the region to provide asylum to those fleeing persecution based on sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. Emmanuel Kiyimba is a gay Ugandan living in the camp. He told Pink News that refugees perceived to be queer are threatened or pelted with rocks or other objects on an almost daily basis. He described how many shop owners in the camp refuse to sell food or other necessities to them because they think that we will leave a curse. Kiyimba said, "We never thought all would end like this. We came to Kenya seeking protection, but we are perishing." The Australian advocacy group Humanity in Need has set up a GoFundMe page to funnel financial support to Block 13 residents.
The UK government LGBT advisory panel is no more. It was set up during the tenure of previous Prime Minister Theresa May to advise the government and ministers on issues and policies concerning lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. Current PM Boris Johnson's administration has long been under fire for dragging its feet on a promised ban on conversion therapy, the medically discredited claim that queer people can be cured. Three members of the 12-member panel resigned last week over what they called the failure of Johnson's conservative government to take proactive actions in support of LGBTQ people. Queer evangelical panel member Jane Ozan blamed her departure on a hostile environment for LGBT plus people among this administration. In their resignation statements, members James Morton and Ellen Murray each cited the government's failure to advance the lives of transgender people in particular. Nancy Kelly is CEO of Britain's leading advocacy group, Stonewall. Kelly remained on the panel because, in her words, many of the key commitments from the LGBT Action Plan, initiated during the May administration, remain incomplete. A government spokesperson told the BBC that a decision had already been made to disband the panel when the terms of the current members expired on March 31st. Without any specifics, they claimed that a replacement panel of some sort will be set out in due course.
Attacks on the lives of transgender young, their medical caretakers, and even their parents continue unabated in a number of U.S. state legislatures. Some measures either ban LGBTQ-inclusive classroom instruction or require parental consent in advance. Republican governors in Arizona and North Dakota are expected to sign those soon, and similar bills are working their way through the Republican-dominated Idaho, Montana, Missouri, and Tennessee legislatures. University of Tennessee Associate Psychology Professor Patrick R. Zhranka warned in a Tennessean op-ed that his state's bill would erase LGBT people and issues from public school curricula completely, scrubbing them from human civilization. Tennessee, along with Arkansas, Mississippi, South Dakota, and Idaho, already ban trans athletes from competing in school sports. Some of those restrictions cover middle and high school through college. Republican lawmakers in Alabama, Arizona, Louisiana, Florida, West Virginia, and North Dakota have also jumped on that bandwagon. Civil and queer rights groups will certainly take all of these anti-trans laws to court. The state of Texas bottoms the barrel of offensive assaults on transgender young people by Republican lawmakers. The state Senate heard testimony this week on bills that would not only deny trans young people appropriate medical care, they would also criminalize supportive parents. More on that story later.
If these bills become law, that, senators, is child abuse.
Wherever you hear This Way Out.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association has thrown down the gauntlet against states that enact laws banning transgender competitors in school sports. The governors of the NCAA issued a warning this week that those states risk the loss of hosting opportunities for championship tournaments. In a press release issued on April 11th, the country's collegiate sports authority affirmed that it firmly and unequivocally supports the opportunity for transgender student athletes to compete in college sports. This commitment is grounded in our values of inclusion and fair competition. The NCAA yanked 7 championship events from North Carolina after it infamously passed its 2016 anti-trans bathroom bill and prevented cities from enacting ordinances banning anti-LGBTQ bias. So the association's threat may not be empty. This week's statement noted that, when determining where championships are held, NCAA policy directs that only locations where hosts can commit to providing an environment that is safe, healthy, and free of discrimination should be selected. The ACLU's Deputy Director for Trans Justice, Chase Strangio, also warned Republican lawmakers and governors that if you continue to pass these misguided laws, state taxpayers risk not only costly litigation, but the loss of revenue from these tournaments. Rodrigo Hang-Lentinen of the National Center for Transgender Equality stressed that the harm is real and is felt very personally by transgender kids just trying to live their lives as who they really are.
Ranking Australian homophobe Reverend Fred Nile announced his retirement from politics this week. The 86-year-old says he'll step down in November. Nile was first elected to the New South Wales Legislative Council in 1981 after founding the Christian Democratic Party. Its membership has dwindled considerably in recent years. Nile has been a notoriously outspoken anti-queer hate monger for decades, railing against any advance in LGBTQ equality or civil rights protections. His chosen successor is another familiar name in right-wing politics, conservative religious commentator Lyle Shelton, ex-leader of the Australian Christian Lobby. Shelton said he was honored to fill Nile's shoes, calling his mentor a courageous and often lone voice for Christ's values. Reporter Link Jenkin noted in the Sydney Star-Observer that any celebration of Nile's retirement should be tempered. Don't expect him to remain entirely silent in retirement. Jenkin cautioned that Lyle Shelton could possibly be worse given that he is considerably younger than Nile and has already been at the forefront of the fight against LGBTQI+ rights and visibility for years.
Finally, President Joe Biden continued to keep his promise of a diverse administration this week with the nomination of Tucson, Arizona's gay police chief Chris Magnus to lead the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency. Magnus began his law enforcement career in Lansing, Michigan, as a police dispatcher. He worked his way up to leading the departments in Fargo, North Dakota, and Richmond, California, before taking the helm in Tucson. He married Terrence Chung, the former chief of staff to the mayor of Richmond, in 2014. A photograph at a demonstration protesting the police shooting death of Ferguson, Missouri, African-American Michael Brown gained Magnus national prominence that year. The Richmond police chief appeared, in uniform, holding a Black Lives Matter sign. He took heat from the city's police union and other law enforcement officials around the country for that. That was also the year Richmond recorded just 11 homicides, its lowest number in decades. If the Senate confirms him, Magnus will not only be the first queer commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, he'll be leading the country's largest law enforcement agency. It's more than 60,000 agents guard both the southern and northern borders and the shorelines of some 320 ports of entry. The agency is also at the center of the country's intense immigration struggles.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending April 17th, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Paula Thomas. Stay healthy.
And I'm John Dyer V. Stay safe.
There hasn't been the recalcitrant pushback. There's not been the anxiety over it from the forces in the field.
We'll remember how military campaigns are won later in the program. To honor Earth Day this week, we're sharing three rainbow minutes on the life and contributions of a woman who was quiet about being queer, but not silent about spring.
The heroine of Earth Day, Rachel Carson, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Born in Pennsylvania in 1907, Rachel Carson jump-started the environmentalist movement with her 1962 book, Silent Spring. Making science easy to understand to the layperson, she alerted citizens and governments to the dangers of pesticides on the food chain. In turn, the federal government took measures against water and air pollution, making Carson a true celebrity. Having already written two books about marine life, Carson had many fans. One was Dorothy Freeman, who lived close to her summer home in Southport Island, Maine. During the off-season, they exchanged intimate letters. Some were labeled the strong box, indicating that they should be burned so as not to reveal the romantic ambiance of their relationship. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Claudia C. Swanson.
It makes me sad that some politicians use trans kids like me to get votes from people who hate me just because I exist.
He has parents who provide him the support he needs. Taking him away from his family because we broke the law to provide that support will have devastating and heartbreaking consequences.
A brave trans kid and a mom who has one speak out. But first... U.S. military's new policy lifting the ban on transgender service members takes effect at the end of April. 10 years ago this month, the Pentagon was figuring out how to end its ban on non-trans queer people, a process that for some was going too well, as I reported in April of 2011. Wishing for a rougher road to Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal implementation does not seem to be working out for Republicans in the U.S. House. At an April 7th hearing of the Armed Services Committee, Chair Buck McKeon of California complained about how the repeal legislation was passed by the Democratic-controlled House last year. McKeon questioned chief military officers on the process now underway, and their answers apparently took him down a peg or two.
What is your current professional military judgment about the risk to military effectiveness?
I had a session with commanders last Friday.
General Peter Chiarelli, U.S. Army Vice Chief of Staff.
They have indicated no issues so far in Tier 1 and Tier 2 training as they get ready to kick off our Tier 3 training.
And I'm looking specifically for issues arise coming out of the Tier 2 and Tier 3 training.
General James Amos, U.S. Marine Corps Commandant.
And to be honest with you, Chairman, we've not seen it. I mean, there are questions. There's questions about billeting from Marines. I mean, the kinds of questions you would expect. But there hasn't been the recalcitrant pushback. There's not been the anxiety over it from the forces in the field. I will tell you that I asked specifically this morning from Major General Tulin, I said, John, what are you seeing in the young Marines that are out there? And he said, sir, quite honestly, they're focused on the enemy. And maybe they'll have questions when they return back to the United States of America, but right now they're very focused, and he doesn't think it's an issue.
We are mitigating the risk in the way we are approaching this.
General Norton Schwartz, U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff.
And so I am more comfortable than I was on the 22nd of December. But we still have a ways to go, and it requires the constant attention of all of us to bring this home.
I'm very comfortable.
Admiral Gary Ruffhead, Chief of Naval Operations.
I was comfortable in making the recommendation last December, and it's consistent with what I continue to see in the Navy today.
I think one of the problems I had as I expressed in my opening statement, and a little of the difference that I had with Ranking Member Smith was kind of the way it was presented to us and given to us. We didn't hold a hearing at the full committee level. We were given a briefing. And the study was handed out to us just as the briefing started. So we really didn't have adequate time to read it, to ask, I felt, appropriate questions. And so my concern was more the procedure of how it was all laid out, but that's passed, and now we're moving forward, and I want to make sure that we really are in tune with what's going on, and that everybody has the opportunity to be involved in the process.
Nevertheless, Congressman McKeon maintained that the chief's testimonies did not necessarily dispel his fears that open service by lesbians and gays might somehow put the military's combat readiness at risk. However, with the Pentagon on board and with the implementation process going so smoothly, there's nothing more the GOP can do to prevent repeal. It's now expected that it will all be over by September. And it was indeed all over in September 2011, with the completion of the certification process in July, followed by 60 days of implementation. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was discharged to the dustbin of U.S. military history. Bye, bye, bye. Bye, 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 bye.
Hello, I'm Billy Bean, Major League Baseball's Ambassador for Inclusion, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
Rachel Carson's letters, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. American biologist and conservationist Rachel Carson exchanged many letters that detail her extremely close relationship with Dorothy Freeman. Over the course of 12 years, starting in 1952, they shared their mutual love of nature and mutual love for each other through letters. Rachel and Dorothy burned some of the letters before Rachel's death. The book Always Rachel, The Letters of Rachel Carson and Dorothy Freeman, 1952 to 1964, by Martha Freeman, Dorothy's granddaughter, includes letters that survived. Before Rachel died of breast cancer, she wrote to Dorothy saying, "My heart aches for you. I was longing to put my arms around you and feel your head on my shoulder. If only I could go to you.
but I know you understand my own health doesn't allow me to. To you, darling, my dearest, truest love, Rachel. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Pat Fishback.
Anti-trans bills moving through U.S. state legislatures at the moment, proposals in the Texas House and Senate are the most cruel. They would strip the licenses of doctors who provide gender-affirming treatment to transgender children. They would also classify trans-supportive parents as child abusers, threatened with fines, imprisonment, and removal of the child. A child and a parent explained to the Texas Senate Committee on State Affairs what those laws would mean to them.
Welcome. Chair calls Kai Shapley. Introduce yourself and give us your testimony. Go ahead.
Hello. My name is Kai Shapley. I love ballet, math, science, and geology. I spend my free time with my cats, chickens, FaceTiming my friends, and dreaming of when I will finally meet Dolly Parton. I do not like spending my free time asking adults to make good choices. I've been having to explain myself since I was 3 or 4 years old. Texas legislators have been attacking me since pre-K. I am in fourth grade now. When it comes to bills that target trans youth, I immediately feel angry. It's been very scary and overwhelming. It makes me sad that some politicians use trans kids like me to get votes from people who hate me just because I exist. God made me. God loves me for who I am, and God does not make mistakes. You should be careful how you treat the least of these. Please, just listen to me. Hear me. Try to educate yourselves. Try to understand everybody. My mom has been giving everything she has to stand up for me. With these new things y'all are trying to do, we both are having to advocate for each other because you are now targeting a great mom and a great nurse. My mom needs her nursing license to take care of me and my siblings. Bullying is bad. Please stop. Don't make bad choices. It's never too late to turn it around. And I want to say thank you to those of you who are sticking up for kids like me. By the time I am in college, you will be celebrated in the history books.
Thank you for your testimony, Kai. Thank you for being here. And do we have any questions? Any questions for Kai? All right.
Seriously? And, none of y'all want to know more about me?
Thanks.
I'm not the mom. I'm not the break in your heart. I'm not the speck in your eye. I'm not the falling apart. I'm not the floor down. I'm not the ceiling. I'm not the fear. I'm not the fear. I'm not the feeling.
Good afternoon. My name is Amber Briggle, and I am terrified to be here today. I'm terrified because I'm the parent of a transgender child, and I'm afraid that by speaking here today, my words will be used against me should SB 1646 or SB 1311 pass, and my sweet son, whom I love more than life itself, will be taken from me. But here I am. When my son was 4 years old, he asked me if scientists could turn him into a boy. I didn't understand then that he was trans. I only knew that he wasn't like most girls his age and that something inside him was hurting. Like many of you, I thought he was asking for surgery and I freaked out. But after doing research, I came to understand that gender affirmation surgery isn't done on minors and that there is a whole array of medical options available for transgender youth, including hormone blockers, which are 100% reversible, are not new,
and are clinically proven to save the lives of the trans children taking them. Today, my son is 13 years old, the most popular boy in the seventh grade, and loved by our friends, family, our church, and our community. This is possible because he has parents who affirm him and provide him the support he needs. Taking that support away from him, or worse, taking him away from his family because we broke the law to provide that support will have devastating and heartbreaking consequences. SB 1646 is a huge government overreach, a violation of a parent's rights to care for their children in the best way they see fit, and a death sentence to transgender children across the state who will be denied life-saving care. I'm almost done. Vote no to SB 1646 and SB 1311, because if these bills become law, that, senators, is child abuse. And I promise I will call every one of you every single time a transgender child dies from suicide to remind you that their lives could have been saved, but you chose not to.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for the witness? Thank you for being here.
Kai Shapley and Amber Briggle testified before the Texas Senate against proposed anti-trans laws. And now, one final minute about another supportive mother.
Environmentalist Rachel Carson remembered, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. An eloquent writer and marine biologist, Rachel Carson became the mother of the environmental movement. In 1962, her book, Silent Spring, warned of the dangers of DDT and other chemical pesticides on the food chain, prompting the federal government to take measures against water and air pollution. On May 28, 1981, a Great American Series 17-cent U.S. postage stamp was issued, first in Carson's hometown of Springdale, Pennsylvania. It was almost square in shape, featuring a sketch of her head turned toward the viewer, printed in green ink on a white background. The Marshall Islands, Palau, and Zambia have also honored Carson with a stamp. Stamps were a precious commodity to Rachel Carson and her intimate friend, Dorothy Freeman, who exchanged hundreds of letters. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mary Gay Hutcherson.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from John Dyer V and Paula Thomas, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Claudia C. Swanson, Pat Fishback, and Mary Gay Hutcherson, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns. Graham Nash, Nomaly Brennett, and Amy Zimmerman performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, and donors James Kennedy and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email to woradio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on Radio Phoenix, Phoenix, Arizona, WESU, Middletown, Connecticut, KSBC, Claremont, California, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.